the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 441790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to an association with the good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Well, we had some shots in South Africa at one stage, 221 for one. South Africa win the toss and batted in the first test. The West Indies are coming back quite nicely. And at the end of the first day's play, the South Africans 314 for eight, with Matt Cram certainly doing a very good job getting to 115, Elgar 71. And certainly in terms of the bowling, I shall certainly tell you that Kemar Roach, 15 overs, 1 maiden, 1 for 65. Al-Zahri Joseph continuing to impress, 16 overs, no maidens, 3 for 60. Kyle Mears, 10 overs, 2 maidens, 1 for 23. Gabriel, 12 overs, 1 maiden, 1 for 49. Holders, 14 overs, 1 maiden, 1 for 64. Roston Chase, 14 overs, no maidens, none for 33. And even Blackwood had a bowl, and over which costs 4 runs. Of course, we're going to be doing an assessment of that. We're going to be going to South Africa live to hear from Casey in a minute. But of course, we also want to talk about the victory by New Zealand. Oh my golly, what a game I was up watching. And I can tell you, that was one of the best matches I've seen in a long, long time. They got over the line by just 1 run, thanks to some very good captaincy tactically. I hope you're hearing that, Dr. Ford. The aggression of Wagner. I mean, you know, I just love to see fast bowlers running. You know, I've argued for a long time that one of the problems in world cricket is that we're not seeing a lot of aggression consistently across the world. Maybe it's why the so many runs being scored and a lot of captains being very, very defensive in field placing. And it was so good to see Wagner running at Stokes and running at Joe Root. And what a shot by Joe Rooks. I mean, it was almost as if he'd given up with that wonderful bouncer. And we want to congratulate from there and from far New Zealand, of course, in terms of their win. Brian Waddle, the noted commentator, is already on Zoom. We're not going to take up too much of his time. I know he's a very busy man. And Kwesi, who, of course, was with us last week, is very much there in South Africa. Let's, first of all, go to South Africa and get a report as to what happened on day one. Hello to you, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you doing?
Okay, good. All right. Your impressions of the first day? 314 for eight, South Africa. Are you happy?
It's a pretty start, if you think about it. From 2-1 for one, one would have thought South Africa would have actually gone through and made at least 33-40, which would have made it a very profitable day, first day for South Africa, considering that the SuperSport Park pitch is playing to its normal character. It's slightly difficult to bet on in that first hour, then it gets easier as the day progresses. And then from days 2 and 3, probably at its best for betting. From days 4 and 5, it then starts becoming slightly tricky. I mean, Zari Joseph did say in the post-match press conference after the game that in his time when he was playing in the SA20, he made it a point of actually educating himself about how South Africa's services work when it comes to red ball cricket. And I think he bowled a typical spell where he kind of struggled with the lines and length early doors. But when he came back for the second spell, I think he bowled very well. He bowled a beautiful straight ball to get rid of Tim Abubu. It did move in a touch, bowled a superb yorker to get rid of Aiden Marstrom. It was, I think, a wicked player you could say was fictitious was Dean Elder, who was a victim of his own foolishness, where two balls before, he actually rammed Alvaro Joseph for four over third man.
Mm-hmm.
And then what Craig Napster did, he moved Jermaine Blackwood to that position where he felt there could be a catch off. But what does Dean Elder do? Feeds his ego, plays the same shot. And what was actually amusing is that the catch was clean, even about replays, but he felt that maybe that catch wasn't cleanly taken. Maybe it wasn't disbelief. But it was one of those days where he felt that South Africa, had they converted stuff, I mean, that first for the opening partnership was 141. That was South Africa's first 50-plus opening stand since the Oval Test of last year against England. I mean, they last made 100 stand. That was against New Zealand in Christchurch. So there were opportunities for South Africa to bet the West Indies out of the game in the first on the first day, because South Africa made, let's say, 230, 240 for the loss of 2-3 wickets. It would have made things rather trickier from a comeback perspective. But that didn't happen. That allowed the West Indies to stay in the game for mm-hmm. as long as they could. I mean, 3-1-4-4-8 means now they have very good possibility of batting again in the first hour. It's Gerald Coetzee and Marco Jansen, who are the not hard batters on 11 and 17, respectively. So I think the West Indies will look back at the fact that from that wicket of Tony DeSorzi, they took 7 for 93, which is an excellent return for them. I think now the key now becomes how do they drive on that advantage in the first half? Because if they allow South Africa to score around 350, 360, mm-hmm. that means the West Indies will have to make 151 to back again. Understandably so, the West Indies do have a very solid opening pitch, especially from what I witnessed in Benoni, what we witnessed in Zimbabwe, what we witnessed in Australia. But I think you'd also agree with me, Mason, that there are concerns
mm-hmm.
with the West Indies in middle order.
Oh, yes.
That if they're exposed to the new ball early, they can and will be problems.
Yeah, indeed. All right, stay with us. Well, of course, we're going to go to Brian Waddle very soon. We're not going to keep you gentlemen too much longer, because we do recognize, first of all, in terms of UKC, the time is way past your bedtime. But let's go to Tony Gray and get his assessment in relation to the first day's play. Tony, are you still at Carnival?
No, I'm not. Didn't went in Tong. I enjoyed myself home.
Indeed. Your assessment of the day's play.
Well, good evening to everybody. Yeah, I thought, obviously, in the first session, we did not do too well with the new ball. We didn't utilize the new ball well at all. We bowled too many boundary deliveries, and the opening batsman, the South African opening batsman, capitalized on some ordinary bowling. I think that the perception that we had was we're going to bowl out South Africa without the process. But after tea, we went through the process and it came back really well into the game. The feeling, obviously, one or two drop catches are not good at all. And I think that, Alvaro Joseph must be complimented.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time when we needed wickets, he came up trump. He was the aggressor. He was the X factor today. And he bowled some wonderful deliveries and he ran in all of the times. So, I mean, he was touching down on 1992. And then Shannon Gabriel started the bowl well. And then the Kemar Roach came into his own. So it was a team effort after the tea period, but we didn't utilize the surface well at all. On that surface, it had some preparation moisture. The ball was moving off the seam. There was some swing through the air for somebody like Kemar Roach to use properly, but we didn't really utilize the conditions well in the first session, but we came back well. I think that South Africa, based on their recent history of struggling with the bat in the first six, they could feel pleased with 314
mm-hmm.
on the first day. But after that brilliant start of 141, they should have gotten 400 runs, really, to put us under pressure. We have to go tomorrow, get those two wickets very quickly, and then settle on and bat. A lot will depend on the opening pair of Tejan Ryan Chandrapal and the captain, Craig Braffitt. But it has to be a concerted, collective effort by everybody. And, there's runs to be had because the outfield is pretty quick. The ball is coming onto the bat, there has to be a strong mental approach to the game against the likes of Nokia and Rabada and Jan Singh, who I think could create some problems with his ability to move the ball off the seam, and also the bounce that he will get with that high arm action. So looking forward to tomorrow's play, but the game at the moment is in the balance.
In the balance. All right. Gentlemen, what we're going to do now, we're going to come back. I'm going to get an assessment from Phil O'Wallace pretty soon, but I don't want to keep our good friend Brian Waddle waiting. Brian, the legendary commentator, what a performance by New Zealand. Take us through this, the nerves. I mean, it was certainly not one for the weak-hearted. I thought in the final analysis, the way that Williamson batted to give New Zealand a chance, just over 250 to get. You picked up some wickets very early, despite a good partnership, you know, between the captain and Root. You were able to come back with Wagner and win that test match by just one run. Talk us through the test match, Brian. What a performance.
Yes, indeed. They don't get any closer than that. It probably could have been a tie, actually. I don't know if you saw the ball before.
Yes.
Jimmy Anderson was dismissed.
Away
it was
to
a
me.
Short lifter down the leg side.
Yes.
Yeah, it had the wide look about it. And that was a tie written all over it. But, you know, you sort of don't want a test match to end with an extra, a wide, or a no ball or something along those lines. But that's what happens. But it was one of those days, and, you know, the written press can't write their final story until the last ball is bowled, because it could have gone one of either three ways. And, you know, they always wanted to have their story ready to go, but it was difficult. But it was an exciting day, in as much you didn't know throughout the day what was going to happen. To me, I like to look at games like that as a celebration of Test cricket and the ability to attract fans, the excitement, the changing nature of the game, and the things that make Test cricket so good. I mean, England were going along quite nicely. What were they? 200 for 5, Stokes and Root. They are wonderful players. And basically at that stage, just after lunch, I was starting to think this is another loss for New Zealand, because England have had the number on New Zealand in recent times. The three tests played there last year and this test. But you mentioned the players who were significant. Kane Williamson, outstanding player.
Brilliant.
We all know that. And he will continue to lead the way. He's now our top test run scorer. A guy who is not getting the credit, I don't think, that he probably deserves too, is the wicketkeeper for New Zealand in Blundell. Tom Blundell, who found a way with the New Zealand attack to limit the English ability to attack. They're playing this aggressive game. They're at the bowlers. They're using their feet. They're getting down the pitch and really having a go. He went up behind the stumps to medium-fast bowlers. Not an easy thing to do, but he showed the skill that was required there. Kept them in their ground, and it meant they weren't able to get the dominance they wanted. But, you know, the changing face of the game. You talk about Neil Wagner. He's a man who used to bowl about 135. He's 35, 36 years of age now. He's bowling at 125. But when it comes to summoning those reserves of energy to bowl a chin music, former West Indies style, when you used to get it going through there on a regular basis in the Caribbean, well, Neil Wagner's made that a specialty of his own. And he's one of those players that probably coming to the end of his time, but he was significant. Tim Southee was significant, and the quality of the fielding. And one piece that really was significant was the run out of Harry Brook.
Yes.
You know, when you get run out without facing the ball in test match cricket, when you are arguably the best batsman they've got, he's a lovely player to watch, Harry Brook.
Yep.
I think we're going to see a lot of him in international cricket. And he was out without facing a ball. And the test just went along those lines. New Zealand were out of it for 2 days. They bowled poorly. Their first innings, 209. They were forced to follow on. People question that, but I think Ben Stokes was probably right in those circumstances to enforce the follow on. And New Zealand batted a lot better. And in that, you see the quality of test match cricket. I mean, you're talking about your game, you know, 200 for the first wicket or so, or whatever the first wicket was, and fighting back. And those qualities are important in any side, and hopefully the West Indies side and South Africa is able to do that in the same fashion that New Zealand did, and I'm sure they will. Mm-hmm. But again, it just is a great exhibition of Test cricket.
Mm. Just before we go to the commercial break, Dr. Ford or Philo, any questions before Brian leaves us? Because we don't want to keep him too much longer.
Brian, it was a very good night to everyone. Brian, it was a fantastic Test match, but it seemed to be like maybe 40% buzz ball at the beginning and then an old-fashioned Test match. Do you think that maybe England moved away from their ethos when the pressure was on and, you know, didn't continue to go down with the guns blazing, and maybe that may have hindered them from winning?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've got that style of play about them, and I think it was New Zealand looking for a way to negate that, and that's why Blundell came up behind the stumps. The New Zealand bowling was a lot more consistent than it has been. I mean, the England style is the way McCullum and Stokes play their cricket. They want to be aggressive. They want to take the opposition on. And I know you hear this this term, Baz Ball, that's come out of, I don't know where it came out of, England or somewhere. I mean, to me, it's just empowering players to play with confidence, to play the game that they feel suits the circumstances. They get trusted. They get into a mindset of playing attacking cricket. And you look at the change in England. You had them out there, what, this time last year, I think, didn't you, in the Caribbean?
Yes.
And they were a shadow of the sort of side they are now.
Mm-hmm.
But they are playing a game, aggressive game of cricket. It's almost as if they want to get it done for a game of golf on the fifth day. Mm-hmm. Good on them. That's a team. People love it. And you've got to find a way to combat that. New Zealand did. They're not unbeatable. No side is unbeatable. And New Zealand proved that if you have the right tactics, you can do it. And that's what they did.
Well, I'm impressed with New Zealand because I don't think that's your strongest side. There's no Bolt. Jameson's hurt. You don't have this fast bowling all-rounder, which was so pivotal in your lineup before. And then Bracewell as a fourth bowler, I wasn't really sure that he could get his overs bowled. So the fact that you won the match, I think, is a real testament to to a team.
Yeah. Well, I think you see the game very much as we do. We are doing a cricket program at the moment, and those things have come to the forefront. We certainly miss Jameson. 6'7", gets the ball to bounce, has got good pace, and we don't have a pace bowler of any significance at the moment. Matt Henry bowling 135 doesn't worry too many people, although he is probably the best of the bowlers at the moment. Southee's coming to the end of his game. We've got to find a pace bowler. We've got to have a bit of courage to play spinners. Bracewell's there because he can bat and can spin. Now, that's fine in the white ball form of the game, but in terms of Test match cricket, we need a genuine spinner. And they seem reluctant to go to Sodhi. And that's one of the areas that New Zealand has looked. So as you read it in that part of the world, it's the same way as we see it here. I don't think we'll see Trent Bolt again playing Test cricket. They've decided that he didn't want a central contract. That in itself is a point of dispute in New Zealand. We should play our best side, some people say. But if he didn't want to be part of the contract set up, then he had to take his chances. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are all those sorts of things that come into the proceedings.
All right. Gentlemen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll do a wrap, of course, with you, Brian, and get some final comments from Casey. And then, of course, we want, of course, to look at not only the cricket, but, of course, the upcoming elections in relation to the CWI elections. All right, Mason and Guest, Broughton Association, with the very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, Mason and Guest, 6:34. Let's go to Philo Wallace. Philo, your assessment of the first day's play. And, of course, I'm sure you want to comment on New Zealand's narrow win. Talk to me, Philo. How are you?
Hey, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to Dr. Ford and all the guests. I see you have Robin Parrish, Bruce Cox, Tony Gray. Good to see you. KC Brand. Before I do the analysis, actually, for the West Indies test, I want to ask Brian about him Saudi's captaincy. He's just been given the job after Kay Williamson has said, look, I had enough. How, as a fast medium bowler, how he kept his cool, and obviously his field placings were quite aggressive, and he got Neil Wagner to really get under the Englishman's skin. How you found his captaincy in this test match, well, the test series on the whole?
Yep.
Yeah, interesting point, because it is a point of discussion in New Zealand as well. He's a senior player and he's a very astute player. I think to a certain extent in the previous games where New Zealand haven't performed well, he's let the game drift. And it seemed to be that way at the start of this test match. But somewhere along the line, he started to use the likes of Kane Williamson. You could see it in the field, the discussions with Kane Williamson, with Tom Latham, who was the captain. And he showed the kind of maturity and unflappable nature that you need to be as a captain in a tight situation. You can't afford to panic. You can't afford to make too many bad decisions. You've got to show the team that you want to win, but that you're not panicking in any way. And I think Tim Southee showed that in this test match. You have to have good leadership to win in tight matches like that. And I think he has come away with a lot of credit because of that. That, of course, doesn't mean that it won't be a problem in the next test, because we've got games coming up against Sri Lanka in a fortnight's time. And I think, as Andrew said, there are areas that New Zealand are painting over or papering over the cracks, and they need good leadership. And certainly, I think, in this test match anyway, Southee proved his value as a leader. And hopefully that continues.
All right. Well, Brian, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your morning. I'm sure you're going to be celebrating that victory. What a victory. I mean, I watched the game, you know, a lot of it, and it really was tremendous to watch. So thanks, Brian. Enjoy the rest of your morning.
It's a pleasure. It's a sort of a word salad now. You've got to go and do interviews and press conferences, and everybody wants to talk to you once they're winning. Thanks very much, mate.
I like that. All right. Now, Philo, your assessment of the day's play, West Indies up against South Africa?
Andrew, I thought it was a good day for West Indies after South Africa posting a good, having a good opening partnership of 141, bringing Markham back into the squad and making him open the batting with former captain, indeed, Elgar, that obviously found a very good tempo. Batting on the surface at Chase Centurion, I thought it was an un-Centurion pitch. The last time I played, I thought it offered a bit more to the bowlers. And it played a little up and down, although it's day one. It still had a little some inconsistency in the bounce. But obviously, they weathered the storm. And the team that was sleep comfortable tonight, I believe, was West Indies. But after being a 221 for one,
right,
or 221 for two, and then you get the 314 for eight, you expect, I think South Africa lost maybe two or three wickets too many. You can't underestimate this guy, Jansen. Huh?
No.
He looks slow, but he actually can score. And obviously his partner with him coming out of the T20, he can hit a mean ball. So we're not out of the woods. These guys can still get there looking at maybe 350. But I believe that we bowl well. Obviously, Andrew Pace is it. And when West Indies selectors sit down with the director of cricket and our performance manager and the interim head coach and the bowling coach, Pace has to be it, Andrew. If you look at Azhari Joseph today, he put some chops in some of those South African players.
Yep.
Because you need pace. If you have pace up your sleeve, you can cause problems. We saw Roach struggle. We saw Shannon Gabriel struggle. You know, Kyle Mears, you know, medium pace, not a lot to him. But pace is it. And I think that I still said a couple of weeks ago, he's looking for 8 fit fast bowlers for the summer. We need to get 12. We need to find some fast bowlers, Andrew.
Yeah, I agree.
We have India coming home.
Yeah, I agree.
We have India coming to the region, and we need to get some fast bowlers to help Azhari Joseph. If one man bowls at 90 and all the others are 78, 80, that man at 90 in trouble. Because he's going to be putting in the effort and there's nobody to help him. But I thought today he looked good, he looked sharp, he looked the fittest and the strongest of all of our bowlers.
He did, yeah.
And he bowled with good rhythm. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the feeling was a little patchy, but they made up for it. And you can see Azari Joseph really in the straps, and he stuck to his plans. I think that when you bowl down a batter at 150 runs, mm-hmm. you got to be bowling special. It was a quick delivery. So when you look at it, paces hit Roach, obviously, you know, continues to show that inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
And we will hope that for his sake, he can go on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Shannon got into the team mm-hmm. because there was no Moody. I don't think we can now, you know, realize I don't think we can play Roach and Gearbin in the same 11. But we had a situation here today in South Africa where I don't think the selectors had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, we can't have two struggling bowlers playing. You know, we need to find that bowler, which obviously would have been Moody if he was fit, to extract whatever there is. Roxton Chase, to me, is not putting a lot into his bowling either. I believe he's a lot better bowler than what we're seeing here today in South Africa. He just looked like an ordinary trundler. Once upon a time, Roxton would turn the ball. Mm-hmm. Oh, good guy, and look to hold lines. You know, he's very inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
But the bowlers pull it back. Thank God for Azari. You know, he picked up those three important wickets. I mean, you hope tomorrow that they will come and finish off this deal. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think they can do it. They have to do it because these South Africans are going to look to bat deep. They'll maybe look to bat for our plus and put some pressure on us.
Mm-hmm.
Not maybe go to bat, you know, we have to try and weather the storm. But I thought today was a West Indies day. And I do hope that the guys can mm-hmm. come out tomorrow buoyant and look to polish off that deal. Don't let that deal wag at all.
Okay. All right. Casey, what were your expectations for tomorrow before you go? What are your expectations?
I pretty much agree with Philo is that 350 will be probably what South Africa are looking for. They are 36 away from that. If the last wickets are able to garner that, they'll most probably look to bowl in an hour before lunch because that'll probably be a problematic period for the West Indies openers, despite them clearly being the West Indies' best batters. So Tejin Narayan Chanderpaul, and Craig Brathwaite do have a task on their hands. They're not the fastest of scorers, which means that the game has the propensity to be dragged out. But again, look, South Africa are carrying two fairly inexperienced bowlers. Gerald Kathir made his test debut. He's already batting on day one. Sinurin Mutsami, left arm spinner. He's in fact ahead of Keshav Maharaj, which is a decision that kind of shocked us. But I think Conrad, the Red Bull coach, has made it clear for the past few weeks that he's looking for a bowling all-rounder. And if that bowling all-rounder provides spin, then so be it. So we're a very delightful surprise in Sinurin Mutsami playing ahead. Look, they didn't do as much with the bat as what was expected of him. One would think that the Wanderers wouldn't be a surface that would aid his particular style of left arm of slow left arm spin. But again, mm-hmm. I would like to digress slightly from what Philo said about the pitch, that the Centurion pitch being an un-Centurion surface. The Centurion surface has changed quite markedly from the time that from the late 90s, early 2000s. It's been a pitch that from day one is slightly tacky to bat on to get hold of, but then tends to ease out from days two and three. So I think the West Indies, by bowling as well as they did, mm-hmm. they may have afforded themselves the chance of actually getting the best batting conditions. But again, look, we're in a similar situation a year ago when South Africa lost the toss, India batted first. India used the best batting conditions to their advantage, where they made 327 all out. And it turned out to be the highest score of the series at the time because no other team across the other 11 innings in the two matches could make more than 280. So, look, South Africa played the better themselves. You know what you call a rat, because I think 3-1-4-8 from 2-2-1-4-2 is a substandard return. We need to be honest about that. As Philo rightly says, the West Indies will go there, will to bet the far happier team. But again, the West Indies still have to bet on that same surface. Alvari did make mention that there are indentations and divots, especially from the West Lane in where he was bowling, that may make a marked difference for the West Indies. And remember that with bowlers like Marco Jansen, Gerald Kutsi, and Castro Rabada, you've got bowlers who are able to actually, may not always bowl at 140-45 plus, but there are bowlers who are able to hit the deck hard and mm-hmm. extract movement and actually exploit those divots. I think a point of difference, just to agree with Philo, will be Andrew Nokia. He is a bowler who is comfortably faster than Al-Zahri to the company faster than Shannon Gabriel. The case now is how is he used by Temba Bavuma for when the West Indies back. But I think when the backing shoots on the other foot, it's going to be interesting to see how the West Indies navigate the Super Sport package.
All right. Thanks very much indeed. It's a pleasure having you on the show. What time is it now there in South Africa? Quickly, tell me. 6:45 in Barbados. What time is it?
It's 1:45 in the morning.
Oh, 1:45 in the morning. Go and get some rest. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking
Thank
to us live from South Africa. All right. 6:45 in the country. Of course, Barbados, they're very much a team is in Dominica. We're going to hear pretty soon from those big officials there in the wonderful suites in Dominica. And we also want to talk to Tony Gray about his expectations, of course, for tomorrow's play. And we also, so many things are happening. We've got the West Indies elections coming up, and former director of Cricket West Indies, Tony Marshall, has joined us. But let's go to Tony now. Tony, Roach and Gabriel, playing together, it's not ideal, is it?
No, it's not. I said when I was in the last program, I don't think that Kemar Roach is potent enough. He's not a huge wicket taker, especially when he is on the West Indies tour anywhere in the world. I mean, it's proven based on his stats. I just don't think that he's getting bounced again. He is lacking in pace. And even when you have movement off the pitch, and we've seen prodigious movement from him today with some deliveries away from the left-handers, we know that he's strong against the left-handers. If you don't have pace, they could pick up the line and leave the ball alone. So to me, when you're playing in South Africa, you want to have that aggression. We saw it in the most emphatic way with Al-Dharij Joseph. That Yorker would be stained in my mind forever, because that was a toe-crushing Yorker at a time when we needed something like that against a batsman who was there, had already gotten a century. So it's amazing that we play Roach and Gabriel in the same game. I say Gabriel because he can get up to 90 miles an hour. And as we know, based on our history, aggression is part of our success. And that fear factor must come back into play. So I'm in agreement with Phil Wallace that we need to have fast bowlers. Mm. We need to work specifically with them. And obviously, we want guys who can not only take wickets with great pace and direct type of deliveries, but obviously create fear. Because when you're playing against the opposition, you want to tactically go after them. You want to inflict fear in their hearts. Guys who are technically strong, if you have fast bowlers coming at you, who could bowl 92 miles an hour, who can hit you, that technique goes out of the window a lot of the time. So we want to have that injection of fear again. And what we want to see control aggression tomorrow. And we want to get rid of those two batsmen. And then we want to show heart and determination, not just technical competence on a pitch that will assist the South African fast bowlers, and obviously they know that pitch.
Interesting. Well, stay with us, Tony. Tony Gray and of course Tony Marshall is with us as well. But let's quickly go to Dominica now, because of course the Barbados team is there, and the manager of the team is with us, of course, Mr. Bruce Cox, and he's got his first officer with him, Robin Paris, who is the assistant coach. Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing there in Dominica? Are you okay, Robin and Bruce?
Hi, Andrew. Good evening to your guests. I am well, myself.
Okay, good.
Yes, good evening, Andrew. To you, your panel, and the guests. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're doing pretty well for now,
okay.
Actually.
How have you settled in so far? When did you arrive in Dominica?
Well, we got here just about 5 minutes to one this afternoon, and we took our trip to the hotel,
ooh,
which is in Portsmouth. And we have settled in. You guys are settling pretty well. We had a few hiccups, but nothing too major.
Mm. Did you get your luggage?
Well, we're waiting for a couple bikes now, and I've learned just before the show started that they have arrived.
Oh,
and
good.
On the way to the hotel.
Okay. Tell us about the games that Barbados will be playing there in Dominica.
Well, we're supposed to be having one 3-day game starting Friday,
mm-hmm.
250 over games, and three T20 games.
Okay.
And it's all part in a very tight schedule because we're back home on the 13th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
So there's a day between the 3-day game, a game between the 50 over games, and then we play back-to-back T20s.
Mm-hmm. Robin, what are you looking for? I mean, you're the technical man there. It's an opportunity for some of these youngsters who are on the fringe. Some of them are making the big side, so to speak. What are your expectations, Robin?
Yeah, definitely. We have a well-rounded, young, still experienced side. Mm. What we're trying to do is to mirror the Barbados Pride team.
Right.
So if you analyze this team would have been picked to mirror, as I said, the senior team. We're looking for consistency. We're looking for players to develop and also show up their personal skills. Meanwhile, you know, putting some pressure on the Pride players.
Right.
You know, putting the names in the ring and, you know, getting the name in the selection room.
Mm-hmm. You're in the north of the island, I'm told. You're not going to be playing at Windsor Park in Roseau. I understand you're going to be playing in the north course. Is that right, gentlemen?
Yes, correct. We're in the north.
Mm. Did you, far north. Okay, did you get a chance to see the venue you're going to be playing at?
Well, we've played here, Andrew, if you remember that. Barbados set off at that time it was under-23/18
right
in 2019, and I can tell you that we had a couple of games there, and the venue is pretty good.
Oh, your venue is pretty good. All right, yeah, wonderful, yeah. Wonderful indeed. Gentlemen, before you go, Philo or of course Dr. Ford, any questions for Robin or Bruce, gentlemen?
So Robin and Bruce, what are your main goals for the tour?
Mm, good question.
Your optimum expectations.
Let's start with Robin.
Obviously the always goal is to win. We want to create that winning environment for the players. Meanwhile, developing. These guys have been practicing now for what, summer developmental contracted players, so they would have been practicing year in, year out. So this gives them an opportunity, as I said, to showcase these skills in a different climate, a different country.
Mm-hmm.
Put them under a bit of pressure. Different wickets will be interesting to see, you know, the kind of surfaces
mm-hmm.
that they produce here in Dominica. But all in all, we're looking for well-rounded performances. Our own players, we got Matthew Ford,
mm-hmm.
Naeem Young. Both of these guys are well-trained and traversing in the short of Virgin, but still, you know, well-trained West Indies youth players. Cheyenne Brath.
Oops.
Mm.
Seems like
stuck. Mm. Cheyenne, you didn't even quite go with the breath with, he's gone. He's stuck. Okay, all right. No problem at all. Well, of course, someone who's not stuck is Tony Marshall. It's really good to see Tony Marshall on Zoom. Hello, good evening to you, Tony. How are you? Former Barbados Cricket Association president, former director of Cricket West Indies, Tony Marshall, and of course, a man who's familiar with this studio, being the top host of Brass Stacks a couple of years ago. Tony, do you miss Brass Stacks? Do you? How are you, sir?
Good evening to you and everyone. And it's really nice to see my friend Philo.
Yes. two Spartan men, huh?
Not just because of that.
Okay.
I think we are friends.
yes, talk to us.
I don't know. The cricket as it stands now,
yes.
You asked about Brass Stacks.
Yes.
I have accepted in life that there comes a time where one has to go.
Mm-hmm.
I believe my time came
mm-hmm.
and I have gone. I would not be honest if I did not say to you that I would be happy to do a guest program.
Mm. Interesting. Interesting.
The year, you know, because I think I, well, of course, it's a different league and a different era. I find that some of the moderators seem unsure of their knowledge. About technical knowledge and talk, worldwide knowledge. But that's that.
I like the way you're unsure of their knowledge. I like that one.
No, no. If you are not reading, what you will not be aware of things that are going on.
Right.
For instance, how many of the moderators read the international press routine for here, where when some issue is brought up, they could say, but as a matter of interest, in Australia right now, so happening. My criticism, it was meant to be just what I think might be more useful to the program. Like now, right now, with all the talk that's going on about the ID cards, have we on the program had any wide information where a similar card is being introduced, the reaction of the public, its conditionalities that are in the are attached to the card? Have we heard it? I may have missed it. No. So it was probably was so. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Fair enough. All right. No. Tony, we're going to arrange for that guest program. Larry Mears is going to speak to the big guns here, and that's going to happen very, very soon, I can assure you. We speak to the right people, and it'd be good to have you back. And, of course, you will be very sure. You'll be very sure of your knowledge.
Andrew, I'm not asking to go. I said I would have no objection.
All right.
But I'm not asking. I'm very happy listening.
All right.
Very happy.
Wonderful. Now, before we talk about the upcoming elections, your assessment, Tony, of the first day's play, I know you love your cricket. At the end of the first day, South Africa win the toss, batting 314 for 8. How did you assess day one?
Well, let me tell you, when they were 221 for 1, I said West Indies got 500 coming at them.
Oh, dear.
So tonight, I believe the management and the players should feel quite satisfied and quite happy to have 8 wickets down. I think very happy. Not they shouldn't be complacent, but they earned their pay today at the end of the day. So I think we are in the game still now.
Right.
Some resolute and purposeful batting, but we're in the game.
Right, right. Good. Now, Tony, let's turn our attention now to the upcoming elections. Dr. Kishore Shallow, the Vice President of Cricket West Indies, is challenging for the big job. Billy Haven out of Jamaica, he is challenging as well. In fact, nominations closed on the 22nd, and he is challenging. Of interest, though, is that Basrat, who is the vice, well, he's challenging for the post of vice president, on a pause, which is a very interesting move. So we already have a vice president in who is the, of course, president of the Trinidad Cricket Board. First of all, are you surprised that it is so structured now where you have Dr. Shallow and, of course, Billy Haven challenging? But in terms of the vice presidency, in the past, you always had a running mate. On this occasion, I don't see a running mate. Does that surprise you?
Yes, I do. I think it's perhaps a very skillful move. My book, I can interpret it in two ways. Could be that given how the proposers, the countries from which the proposers and seconders come, that Trinidad seems to be the key card.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And it would seem that, Dr. Kishore either knows something that other people don't, because it is not usual, as you just said,
mm-hmm.
for a president to come forward without a running mate.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he's doing so says something. But then on the other side of that coin, the fact that Mr. Bazarat is unchallenged, it makes the Trinidad vote appear to be very fluid. Because obviously he is going to support the man that he wants to work with. And depending on who that is, then I think the Trinidad vote would go in that direction.
Oh,
yes, yes. If Mr. Bazarat feels that he can work better with Kishore,
mm-hmm.
or he can work better with Billy, then he, I would want to think, would be able to persuade Trinidad
mm-hmm.
to in that direction.
Oh.
That is a loose coin in the function at the moment, which makes the election, I think, unclear.
Unclear. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
I would have thought that the fact that Kishore served with the last president, but still president, that he would have come out seemingly more confident with a running mate.
Hmm.
For there's some questions there that want answering, and he can answer them, nobody else. But I have a feeling that this election is going to be a surprise election.
Oh, tell us about that, Tony.
Well, I sort of said just now, where is the vote in terms of the presidential seat? Where is it?
Mm.
I don't think anybody knows for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Guyana, who is supporting Jamaica's candidate,
yes,
has also supported Bazarat.
Yes.
That therein lies the tale.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a very interesting one. Yeah. In fact, he was proposed. In fact, you seconded Guyana, the vice president. That's interesting. Tony, I'm not going to ask you about the elections, I know. But in terms of the new president, as a cricketer, a former cricketer, what are your expectations from the new president? If you had to meet with Dr. Shallow or Billy Haven, what would you be saying to them? What would you want for West Indies cricket, Tony?
Well, obviously, we want to see West Indies cricket have upward mobility and performance in all formats of the game.
Hmm.
How we're going to do that is to develop players from a very young age. But what we have seen in recent times is, and I keep on calling for professionalism. You know, we talk a lot about coaches and players being educated in their sphere, all right? But we want to see the administrators being educated too, because it's an intricate job being a sports administration or a sport administrator, and especially in the system that we have. It's very, very complicated, and that's where we have gone wrong. We don't understand that it's a complicated situation, and we need people who are professional to lead us. And we have to professionalize the different boards of the region. One of the things that we have to do is to understand we need to get monies into the coffers of West Indies cricket to have the right type of systems to pair coaches with what is going on in different parts of the world, to have coaches, the proper coaches, who are well-educated and covers all aspects of the game to develop players from a very early age. One of the things that we need monies to do also is to do research.
Right.
And we have to pair with the different universities throughout the Caribbean to understand what causes success.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had success, great success, not paralleled by any cricketing nation before. And we need to look back to understand what caused success. We also have to understand the changes that have happened in our society. So we want people who understand all these things. But we need money. And how are we going to get that? I mean, we've had a lot of different facilities throughout the Caribbean where international cricket is being played. Are we going to be dependent on sponsorship alone? Or are we going to be very creative? Because we are creative people generally in the Caribbean. And get monies into the coffers of West Indies cricket through using the culture that we have. In Trinidad, for example, have we really and truly brought monies through the culture that we have? I mean, we have a national cricket center with vast areas, great facilities, and we just had Carnival. Have we thrown fets to get monies into the coffers? So I think that professionalizing the different boards
right.
is very important. And the fact is, we cannot leave people in positions over a long period of time and they're not accountable for what is happening with West Indies cricket. It seems that we're going down and down. And to me, because I've looked at my educational background and different aspects of the game, through courses and that sort of thing, to me, it's much easier than we think. But we have to come away from the archaic mentality and put pressure on our administrators to respond properly to what has been a God-given aspect of our lives, West Indies cricket.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Dr. Ford, fellow, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, of course, I do know you gentlemen have questions for both Anthony Gray and Tony Marshall. The lines are open as well, 4341-790. I expect the race to be a very interesting one. Dr. Kishore Shallow, who's the current vice president. Billy Haven out of Jamaica, the president of the Jamaica Cricket Association and Basrat. Well, he doesn't really have to do too much, really, because he's already the vice president on challenge. Mason and guests, Broughton Association, with the very good friends at ASFE Work Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE, White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, it's heading to 7 minutes past 7 o'clock. Dr. Ford or Philo?
Yeah, well, gentlemen, we've had, let's say, the last 10 years of Cricket West Indies administration. We've had two presidents, and we've had success that has been diminishing. Each of these presidents and the other members of the board have been within the Cricket West Indies structure for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And even the two candidates for this year have been administrators at our regional level for, in some cases, 6 or even more years. But we've had no change in structure. And my question is, are we really picking among maybe some burnt out administrators trying to fix up without changing the structure? And that I put to you, Tony Marshall. So do we need to look elsewhere?
Tony Marshall, and not Tony Gray.
An interesting question. Let me say very quickly that I think a change of structure is more than overdue.
Okay.
I don't remember how many years ago. Andrew is a statistician and a historian. When the former president of Jamaica, the Honorable
Pat Root.
Bill Patterson was put ahead of a commission to inquire into West Indies cricket. I sent a paper to him.
Right.
And in it, I recommended that the board should be cut to about 8 members.
Right.
Structured something like this. Select 2 of the best reported upon businessmen in the region.
Right.
Followed by 2 past West Indies players who showed some inclination to being businessmen. And then select the other four from anywhere in the region. So in other words, there would be no rule that says that two must come from Barbados, two from Guyana, two from Trinidad, because I think that lends itself to a lot of horse swapping.
Yes.
It lends itself to the fear, the popular people in any territory are almost guaranteed to be get on the board. Mm. We ought to be looking for talent. I feel that the presidents or other members of the territorial boards should form an advisory committee. In other words, they would not be anything to do with the board. And I make these comments because Tony Greer just said and repeated it more than once, they need money.
Yes.
And I don't think that in general terms, I have to be very careful. I do pick up some points that and hammers them mm-hmm. when one really saying something across the region.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed out that there's need for money.
Right.
But what have we done? What plan have you heard of? If my information is correct, I'm going to raise a point here.
Mm-hmm.
Pakistan refused to go to England.
Yes.
England refused to go to Pakistan. West Indies were invited. I understand that the major development out of that agreement was that West Indies got a loan of a few million pounds, which had to be repaid in the short term. Now, if that is true, that is not business.
No.
Because they were in the driver's seat at that time and ought to have secured some gravy for the West Indies board. I'll move on. Many, many years ago, I made the suggestion, and I don't want to talk about Aya, but what do you want me to say? I can't say Andrew did it or the Lord did it.
Mm-hmm.
That one US dollar of departure tax in each territory should be handed over to the West Indies Cricket Board.
Hmm.
Politicians are extremely eager to get on the air whenever West Indies does well. Ask if the various territories have made contributions to West Indies cricket. Don't let them mislead you into believing that the construction of a stadium is the contribution. Because basically, in my book, that contribution is intended to collect foreign currency from tourists, et cetera, for the country's economy, not for West Indies cricket. And so that kind of thing, look at Liat. I give you an example. Why should Liat be in the state that it is in? It is a fact that several territories did not make contributions to Liat. Look at the University of the West Indies. Some territories have never made any contribution to it. We do not seem to recognize what is a regional institution in this area. And West Indies cricket is. It's given us our name. It's anywhere you go and you merely mention that you're from Barbados, somebody's going to ask you about Sagarfield Sobers. So I think the time has come when this two persons from each territory has long outlived its usefulness. We need a board of business-minded people to run the affairs of West Indies cricket. Leave the selection panel and the technicians to look after the technical side of cricket.
Hmm.
Enhance the business side of the thing, because we will not last very much longer if we continue the way we are now, as I understand it.
Fellow?
I invite much criticism.
Yeah, what, Mr. Good evening, Mr. Marshall. How are you?
Pretty
good. New Year. What you're saying makes a lot of sense, Mr. Marshall. Also, you have to look at those articles of incorporation of Cricket West Indies and read them, see what is written in those articles in relation to those board members or becoming a board member. Because I do feel that We have people sitting in the West Indies cricket director's chair for so long with no forward movement. And I've sat on a committee that you came in as an invited guest, and you've made the same points. Yes, the governments jump up and down when the West Indies are doing well. And you said, look, ask them for $1 from the departure tax. I can bet you that the President, Ricky Skerritt, and Vice President, Dr. Shallow, has never approached any regional leader with that idea. But they want money. We can't get money if we don't win. ICC is doing us no favors, and more territories, more countries are coming into ICC cricket. So more countries coming into ICC cricket, it's going to be less money for those who are in already, unless you're outstanding and get big sponsorship. So my question to you, Mr. Marshall, do you honestly believe that Cricket West Indies needs to have the Articles of Association amended in order to reduce the board and reduce those directors and seek outside help in relation to building a model on revenue earning?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think I implied it by saying that the idea of two players from each territory has long outlived its usefulness. The board, and I want to use the word, the management and directorate of West Indies cricket needs to come into 2023. It is still in 1843.
Okay.
Many, you see, the other thing is this. It's unfair to ask Joe Smith, who runs a company in whatever territory, and who has contributed to that territory's cricket to his business, and you make him a member, but he has no fundamental interest in cricket,
right?
Nor is he trained in investment or
right.
any such thing.
Yeah,
you're asking. What are you asking for? You're asking for what we are getting now. No results.
Well, Mr. Marshall,
my name is.
Can Tony, I ask the question?
Of course, Tony.
My namesake. Mm. The thing about it is that, do you feel that we have been cultured over the years to understand the benefits that can be derived from West Indies cricket and have been derived from West Indies cricket through the success? Do we look at it like, or do we see it as a game of great soldiers, people like Gordon Greenidge, Desmond Haynes, the Sir Vivian Richards, Joel Garner, and Michael Holden? Do we see it as a business? For example, I asked Ms. Skerritt when he just got appointed as president of the CWI, what feasibility studies have been done in Caribbean cricket to see the kind of money that have come in and the support of the tourism sector, things like that. I mean, I don't think that we see it culturally. We look at cricket and we look at the great stars on the field of play, but we don't understand, the impact, the social impact, the financial impact, the impact on the tourism sector. So I ask for a feasibility study to be done, especially when we were successful, because people see it as just a game and they don't see the huge benefits. What about the social benefits? I mean, I come out of West Indies cricket, the love for it to see Michael Holden bowl. Mm-hmm. What about the inspirational part of young people? We've seen an influx of crime. We've had 100 murders already. We need sport to take the young people towards positive things. So we don't understand the huge all wrong benefits that have been derived from West Indies cricket, and that's why I feel that we stagnated in time, because we still look at it as a game, but we don't understand the different positive tentacles of success in different areas because of West Indies cricket.
Just before Tony before you come in, Tony, 434-1790, you can give us a call and participate. Yes, Tony Marshall.
Am I hearing you saying what I said earlier in different language? am I hearing you to say that you believe the structure of the West Indies board needs urgent revamping? Am I hearing you saying that you feel that people who have proven track records in business, in other words, there ought to be a business arm of West Indies cricket? We do not have that now. We may have an accountant, we may have somebody with another title and so on, but we don't really have a business arm who at the end of each year must give account of progress made. What is the target of the West Indies board this year? To make how much money? The job I held every year, I had to speak to my directors and tell them what I expected my territorial responsibility to be. And at the end of the year, I had to understand that I would be graded, and there were only three. Met, surpassed, and failed. Those were the only three grades. I may be singing a song by myself, but I am sure that some of the other international units have such. And I believe if we do not quickly assume that mantle, we're going to find that our cricket is going to continue in the direction in which it is maliciously headed.
Dr. Ford, just before you come in, there's a call in the line, 4417 90. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Yeah, good night to the panel, to you, Andrew, on the panel.
Good night to you.
Andrew, you are a very smart man. You bring a man in, Nehemiah, tonight. And you know that Nehemiah prayers, obviously, you're going to need those prayers tonight.
Yes.
That's what I can tell you.
All right. All right.
Hey, Mr. Marshall.
Oh, you have a question for Mr. Marshall?
No, just they have two this evening here, fellow.
No, well, it's Tony Gray, and Tony Marshall. Unless
Tony Gray.
And Tony Marshall. Unless fellow's second name is Tony.
Tony Gray, we change his name, bang name.
Okay.
Become a rose rather than gray.
Right. Okay, we got another call coming through. Let's take the call. There's another Tony in the studio as well, too. He's got green on. Hello, welcome.
Good evening, Andrew. How are you doing?
Good evening to you.
All right. We are talking about West Indies. I want to ask a little question first, right? The president. When somebody becomes the president of West, do you find anybody glamour for this job? What they do? They get free travel. They get. I don't know. They get a salary, but they get a. What is the beef behind being the president of West? What's the kick behind the kick? The perk behind it. That's my first thing. Yes. Right. When you become the president of West, you hear scary. You had all these stuff. What is it that makes these people hungry for this sport? Because I want to go back to something that Tony Marshall is saying.
Yes.
What is there, Andrew? You were wrong. Tell me what a president does.
No, power. I mean,
and power.
Yes, of course.
All right.
And social standing as well.
All right, so let me go past that then, all right? Because everybody ran past us. When we had talent, we didn't use it. And now we don't have talent, we're struggling, right?
Yes.
Now, I understand the business part with Tony Marshall. I deal with him 100%.
Right.
But I am saying to you and everybody else, right? Unless we get talent in terms of people being able to play this game, that is what is going to attract people. So we need in the territories to find primary school people and get people into cricket. We got, like how Jamaica deal with athletic.
Right.
We got to get money from someplace, maybe the tax that Tony Marshall is talking about. But until we get quality players, look at Australia cricket. Look at England, they have a little resurgence. Oh, once you have people that, and you only need two people, you know. You don't even need to have a partner team. But if you have a brand that people will come to see, then you are going to attract people from all over the world. So we need to get players. We need to get people. And the youngsters are coming. We got to get them noted. They've got pride in the stuff. You have some of these fellas go play cricket and get them. I don't feel they care. They're about the money. They don't have investing. So when they get in their big salaries and got our hearts bleeding, They don't really care about West Indian cricket. And we have to have a mentality. It's just like, oh, you're getting criminals all about the players, so shoot in, shoot there. Because they ain't got no value system. You got to go see the value system about cricket, the love for it, what it means to us. The proudness. I walk as a young boy all over the world, talking to all over the world, how you felt as a West Indian and the glory that cricket brought us as people. Until we get 11 players, or maybe 6 or 5, that can make the world look at West Indies different, we will be on a downward spiral until the coast comes home. We need in the territories, these fellas know that running to be president, put a structure in place in every territory that is 5 and 6 years. We might not be world beaters tomorrow, but in 10, 15 years from now, but you got to start someplace. If we, all these fellas know who want to become president for the prestige and thing, tell them step aside. We don't want to see them. We want to see people that can bring some business ventures to help get a little corporate. But in the meanwhile, we have to go a proper cricket development system that people can say we have a Brian Lara, we have a Courtney Watts, we have a Malcolm Marshall, that type of cricketer, that the world will clamor to see us again. And until we get there, we're going nowhere.
All right, thanks.
Have a good night.
Thanks for your contribution, 4341790. We're going to pause for business calls. It heads to 7:26. We go until 8. And when I come back, I just want to talk a little bit with the two candidates, the assessment of Billy Haven, who is running for the post. He's the current president of the Jamaica Cricket Association. And Dr. Kishore Shallow, who is the incumbent vice president of Cricket West Indies. Mason and Guest, Brogdon Association, with our very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right. Well, my information, Tony tells me before we come back to you that Dr. Shallow has gotten the support of, well, of course, he will be nominated by the Windwards, the Leewards, and possibly Trinidad. I'm also hearing through the grapevine, fellow Wallace told me today that my good friend, fellow told me that our good friend there in Jamaica, Billy Haven, has got the support of Barbados. Tony, I mean, you're a former president of the Barbados Cricket Association. Have you spoken to the incumbent, Condé Riley, about Barbados' support, Tony?
Most definitely not, sir.
Oh, dear. When last have you spoken to Condé?
Oh, not too long ago. Well, okay. It depends on what you mean by speaking. I've not had any discussion with him.
Okay, fair enough.
I would think in that particular... First of all, let me say something quickly.
Yes.
The last speaker, the last caller... All he is talking about calls for money. You can't develop a Malcolm Marshall and a Brian Lara without money.
That's true.
Whenever you are finished, you're going to get back to the need for money. Okay. I don't know what to say. I think that we misread the game badly because from the time 2020 started, our understanding of the game changed. I was talking to Zagari a couple of months ago, and he made a comment to me that has stuck with me. Said 3 fours are 12. But all West Indies players believe they go hit sixes. But you can hit fours on the ground and you can't get caught.
Yes.
Huh?
That's very true.
The 2020 all of a sudden seems to be interpreted by our players as six hitting. And it has ruined our cricket. Because when you're only bowling 4 overs and you're only batting 15 or 20 minutes, invariably, when you come into the test match and there's need for you to bat 3 hours or to bowl 18 overs, what is going to happen? And that is why I say our cricket needs a new, vibrant administration who can change things up a bit and so on. Plus the NOC. I don't understand how we can have players, and that caller is pointing out we don't have any stars. But if you go and look into the various leagues, there are about four of them, 2020, we have players in there. I don't know if they're stars. I know that they're respected and paid well. So how come those players can be seen in that light, in that environment, but in the West Indies game, we can't?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have people now who can decide, I'm not playing in this series. I'm not playing in the next series. I'm available two series from now. How we reach there? Mm-hmm. And how the international bodies don't have that problem? Australia, England. But don't call India's name. India is a special, special case. How come they don't get there? You know what it is? Money.
Mm-hmm.
And our governments have to understand that if West Indies cricket is to mean something to the region, to tourism, to the economy, they're going to have to contribute.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's heading to 7:30 exactly. Before we come back to Dr. Ford and of course, fellow and Tony, there's a call on the line. Let's take that call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guest. 7:31 in the country.
Yes, good night, Mr. Mason.
Good night to you.
And guest. Thank you, and I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I want to support Mr. Tony Marshall fully.
Sure.
We have to change our outlook. Cricket is a sport, but it is a business. And if we do not understand that, we will just watch the demise of the business and the sport in our region. We must change our outlook and we must respect and find those who can administer the sport as a business, because the facts are every player has to be paid. Enough resources has to be found. Cricket is not managed like FIFA. So we have to do it on our own in this region. And we have to find the capital that is required to keep the thing alive. It is a good sport. It is viable. It is financially viable. And it is viable here. We have a brand. And we must realize and respect that and develop it so that we can find it. We can earn the money from it. So I just wanted to support Tony's position fully and the board. That needs to be changed. It must be changed. We can't go on with this current method with persons just wallowing on the top of the steps. It must go.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Tony, let me come back to you now. Let's talk about Billy Haven, who is the president of the Jamaica Cricket Association and now running for the top job. Have you ever met Mr. Haven, Tony?
You're talking about Tony Gray? I seriously cannot recall meeting him. I cannot recall it, but I would suspect, given my stint as president here and as a director of the West Indies Board, that I must have met him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Must have met him.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised that he's running for the top job?
I am surprised that Dr. Kishore is being challenged.
Oh, that's interesting.
I would have thought that he would have had the experience which he would have gathered sitting in the inner courts of West Indies cricket for the last few years, that he would have come out unchallenged. That's what I thought. But obviously, people have a different opinion, a different view, etc. I have no doubt in my mind that he has the mind and the brain power to be able to do things for West Indies cricket. I have no doubt about that. I'm not saying that nobody else has. I'm saying that based on what little I know of him, I think that is how it is.
Doctor, are you surprised that of the comment made by Tony in relation to the whole question of Dr. Shallow being unchallenged?
Well, I think that I don't think that Dr. Shallow did enough to separate himself and to grow in the vice presidency role.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that would have required him to to go against some of the decisions and I guess the flight plan of his superior president. I think you have to accept if over the last 30 years, all we have to look at is beating England at home and maybe a few T20 wins and things haven't gone well. We need a new dynamic thinking. And one of the issues is that the top candidates are individuals who are not stellar local administrators. So they don't have a foundation of success to really be compelling in their reasons to lead a bigger organization. Mm. And I think any vice president that wants to be president has to grow and to become insurmountable and compelling. And I don't think that enough was done in that role. I guess it's the same thing we could say that's going on in maybe in America and some other places. So this is why the challenge has come up. Because last week when we were speaking to him, he said, well, we have to understand the vice president's role. But when you know that the president has been on simmer for about 18 months, you can take over knowing he isn't coming back and just become the main force that you should be. So the weakness is perceived, and that's why the challenge is there. Because everyone who has ambition can smell and taste weakness. So I think that it will be important for him to persevere if he's to remain a force within this group. Mm. So I mean, it will be interesting, but still they have the challenge of let's say retreatitis, I call it, and also always wanting to have a review, never giving any results of the review, never charting a course. One of the big issues with Cricket West Indies is that there's no significant and plain trajectory or course that they have put up either for economics or for development or for the team performance. There's nothing that is set in stone that we can look at and measure. Just like Mr. Marshall said, you have to look and see if you've missed it or you've made it or you just have stayed in one place. And I think this lack of vision is a reflection of the collective of Cricket West Indies as it is. All of the burnt out directors, all of the guys that have been there for too long. I have an experience as an administrator. And I know that if you do the same thing over and over, even though you get better at it, you need an influx of new blood to come up with new initiatives. And that's what's lacking within the Cricket West Indies. And definitely this obstinance of not wanting to change the structure and also having the CEO and other people tell us how good the economics is going when we know it's going badly, and yet they speak for long minutes and really say nothing to convince us that the economics is going better. All these things speak to an organization that lacks function. And unless we really accept it, we will not come out of this 30-year downward spiral and we will become invisible.
Just before Philo comes in, there's another call in the line. Philo, after the call, we'll come to you and then to Tony. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good evening, Mr. Mason. How are you? This is Mohammed Nasser.
Hey, Mohammed, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, sir. Happy to hear you, and I obviously always listen to your program. I told you it was the best program on here. I always say that. I hope you know that.
Well, it must be the number one. I'm even further now with Tony Marshall on it.
The
stocks have gone up, huh?
You know, there's a high-class man in cricket and in business and in most things that get involved in. We know that.
Mm.
But I would say about this thing. We always talking about cricket. We are not doing so well. We do not have any good players yet. Mm. Cricket goes and come. Right now, India making sport of Australia is because they have better players right now than Australia. And they have treating Australia real bad. What I'm saying is that all the business and everything we're talking about, if we don't find somewhere to, I hope that we get better players, or I hope that the players that we have improve tremendously, we're going to be talking the same thing we're talking now. So let me say this to the country and to the Caribbean. There was a man in America who was training top-class horses. And a fella bought a horse that he paid, I think, $50,000 for, to the guy to train. And the million-dollar horse only started to quarrel and said that he was paying too much attention to this cheap horse. And the guy said, you all can take away all your horses from here. This cheap horse will win the Triple Crown. And it went on to win the Triple Crown. What I am saying is all the managers that we have, all the captains we have, don't care what we do until we get quality players that can be guided in economics. We are going to any position we are in. I don't understand how we can change it. If a man can't play well, he can't play well. Nobody can make Bolt run fast. Bolt born to run fast. So anybody can train Bolt. You don't have to train him to not to run over your legs and think and to get the, and don't beat the gun. I am saying that we have to find somewhere, and if they will come, I have no doubt that in the Caribbean within the next 2 years, we are going to have some super players. Mm-hmm. But right now, look at cost. We're so far from 300 and something. What does it do? Does it not?
It's 214 for 8 at the end of the first day.
Right. You can imagine that. You really believe that we had good cricketers that could have happened?
No. No.
Right. But what I am saying, don't get me wrong, I want the cricketers don't think that I am saying that I don't want them to function and do that. I am saying they're not as good as cricketers we had before. So we have to start. And I just let me say this quick, because I have to pay water to get on. You see this idea of how we train our cricketers to play cricket? Now, if I had power, they will not be able to play in a helmet until they start a player for the Barbados or the West Indies or in the Caribbean, or in the Caribbean. They will have to face fast bowling, not making sport, but you might get hurt. When you're going to, when you're going to real match, you can face fast bowling, right? You put on your helmet, you put on whatever you want, but you have to face hostile bowling. Mm-hmm. If we do not train our people like that, you think we can produce good leaders, good cricketers? Mm-hmm. We're treating them too, don't get me wrong, I know they're nice people, huh? But we are treating them too babyish. They have to face the music. We want some fast bowling. They're not playing for the West Indies, but they must be fast, like we used to play before. And if we do that, we'll produce good cricket. But right now, we're seeing a lot of fellas. They're making a lot of money, which is good. But then they become star boys. They really don't, I don't believe, believe me, I don't believe that all cricketers pay as much attention to cricket as to money.
Right.
And we have to get them to play more cricket attention, and they will make more money. Well, I think I'll leave it for that because
just stay on the line because the gentleman here wants to speak to you, of course, Ken Husband. So stay on the line. Thanks for your contribution. Let's go to Philo.
Hey, Andrew. Andrew, this is why concerning to me as well, the little West Indies elections, is that you have a president who does not have a running mate.
Right.
I don't know. I have never heard of that before in cricket West Indies. I know a president will always come with a running mate who he's looking at to be his vice president.
Right.
Now, as Ambassador Ralph, who's the president of Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board, is the only candidate for the vice president of Cricket West Indies.
Mm.
Now, how is he going to marry with what whoever is the president? Mm. Let's say it's Dr. Shallow who wins the presidency. Is he going to marry with him, knowing that you were on your own and you were fighting for the candidate, you were fighting for the position of president? How are we going to work together as vice president and move forward? Because I believe that the vice president of Cricket West Indies has a role to play. And that role has to be discussed at the board level. Yes. So if you're not bringing me as your running mate, how can we be on the same page going forward to have this one commodity called Cricket West Indies blossoming? So my question to Mr. Marshall, has this ever happened before in West Indies cricket in the AGM? We have a guy who says he's running for the presidency. He doesn't have a running mate to be his vice president. Mm. Has this ever happened before? And can you see some conflicts coming out of this whole president separate, vice president running on their own?
Mm. Tony?
It has not happened to my best knowledge or what's involved. And it goes further than you say, in that if you look at what is the position today, Trinidad and Guyana are the supporters of the vice presidential candidate.
Right.
Neither is a supporter of Kishore. And one is a supporter of Billy Haven.
Mm.
So, you, as you rightly said just now, Bill, there's a split in thinking. The thought process which has been applied to seeking to get the right person, there is a split in that thinking. Not that there shouldn't have individualism, but clearly, when it comes now to sitting down and working with the man, I believe that you started with a headache, with a problem. And that is one of the reasons why I've said that the advisory board should be one thing and the board of directors should be a different matter altogether. No thing between the two of them. No cohabitation.
Tony?
I think, yes.
This is Tony Gray now. As in Basrat, have you spoken to him? I mean, are you surprised that he's all alone as if candidate, but he's going to be in the job because he doesn't have an opponent? Does this surprise you, Tony Gray?
Not really. I think that he's a smart politician. I think that he's very smart.
Smart politician, and you should know because
that's right. I think that he has read the politics of West Indies cricket quite well. As it pertains to this election. I prefer to stay away from the politics because I want to concentrate on cricket, but I also want to say that the candidates, we must look at their resumes. I mean, anybody could run for West Indies, different position, and these different positions are very impactful, all right? But we want to view their resumes and see the body of work and the successes they've had. I think that Mr. Marshall made a point that if they don't have a background of being strong administrators, I think as Dr. Ford, do not have a background of being strong administrators.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come to West Indies cricket, which is very complicated and intricate, how are they going to be able to handle all of these different parts? And they are moving parts too. So it becomes very difficult. And I prefer to look at resumes. When I looked at the resumes of Dr. Shallow and Mr. Skerritt, I said, wow, this could be ideal because they cover so much of different things that has happened in West Indies cricket. Technology, and Dr. Shallow is excellent with that. Tourism, Mr. Skerritt being a former tourism minister, excellent like that. Obviously, he was a former manager of the West Indies cricket team. So there is some knowledge where cricket is concerned. And I looked at that and I said, wow, this is excellent. They just have to have the right people around them to make it interested again and to make West Indies cricket viable again. So I prefer to look at the body of work that they have done over the years and the successes they've had in different aspects of management, and judge them that way.
All right, let's go and take another call. 4341790.
Good afternoon.
Good night.
Good afternoon.
Good night.
Good night. Andrew.
Yes. Good night to
this
you,
is
sir.
Victor Anthony Perlman Young here.
This is who?
Victor Anthony Perlman Young.
Victor Anthony Perlman Young.
Right.
How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. We could get all the presidents in the world.
Right.
All the coaches in the world. Right?
Right.
But the thing that we ain't got, not playing cricket are not fit. You could got all the talent in the world. All you could got everything in the world. And you ain't fit.
Right.
You're wasting time. You can get them all the money in the world. And they ain't fit. I hear somebody on your program, there's some official talking about the fitness test that the guy's going through is too hard. When I hear that, they hold on my head with laugh. You can tell me a fitness test that fella's going through that is professing, it could be too hard. You could ever be too fit to play a game. You could never be too fit. The key is fitness, and the guys are not fit. Most of the guys are pregnant, the coaches, and also the, some of the officials with big bellies in front of them. Somebody don't want to emulate somebody with a big belly in front of you, telling you as a coach.
Mm, I see.
Huh? You can't work. We got to stop burying our heads in the sand and make the guys understand you got to be fit.
Fit, yes. And you're very fit, too. And you're very fit. And you're pretty fit. How old are you now, Victor?
85.
85. When would you be 86?
Well, I'll be 86 next year in January.
Oh, you're January, man. Are you still running?
Oh, I'm fantastic. No, I don't see none of these guys out sprinting me at my age.
Oh, but
none of them.
You reckon?
None of them. They're jokers, man.
Okay.
They don't understand. Keep fit. All right. Listen, if a guy was a former cricketer, okay, and he stopped playing cricket, and he started to get pregnant, how are you going to emulate people? Well, right. Anytime you was a former athlete or anything, you should look apart.
I agree with that. Victor? I want to thank you before you get the station in trouble. Thank you very much for your contribution. Wonderful. Ken was a bit nervous there just now. Ken, I saw you. Ken. All right, so we're going to take a commercial break.
Hey, Phil, okay. How are you, man?
You haven't said...
Ken, I'm fine, man. Nice to hear your voice. Yeah.
You haven't said hello to Tony Marshall?
Oh, Tony Marshall and I. good evening, Mr. Marshall, sir. Is he?
And Tony Gray.
Good evening, kid.
And Tony Gray.
All these are big shots. How do you manage to attract all of these celebrities on your program?
Well, because of you.
I refer to them in another language.
As good as, but not better than.
Bourgeoisie.
All right. Let's take our final commercial break. 4241790, you can give us a call. Mason and Guest, brought in association with our very good friends at ESFE, where we run the best show of the day.
The winning sound of Network Sports.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, just a couple.
Oh, the winning sound of Network Sport.
What's going on there, sir?
Some technical hitches.
Okay, all right. So you're no longer Big Shot. Philo, do you expect the race to be tight? Philo?
I do look at that. Judging for what Mr. Marshall said in relation to who proposed and seconded the candidates, when you look at it, as he said, with Trinidad, president running on his own as for vice president, getting the support from Guyana, he would clearly get support from his board. And I'm surprised if Azim Basraf doesn't get any support from Trinidad. He would definitely get support there. And then who have proposed and second the candidate from Jamaica, and who have proposed and second Dr. Shallow. The territorial boards, there's a lull. So there's going to be a split somewhere. I don't know if it's deliberate done to get the split. But it's going to be a split. There's no clear sight of who is going to be the winner. Mm. And I agree with Mr. Marshall in a sense where, because to me, Dr. Shallow is taking the same road that Dave Cameron would have taken. Sat in the vice president seat for a while, get his feet wet, get the support, you know, gain support from the directors there, and then push for the presidency. So I honestly believe that. I thought that Dr. Channel would have been the only candidate. But seeing that Billy Haven has come out and decided to challenge for the presidency, there is some uncertainty on what has been happening. But I think the race is not going to be as clear-cut as we believe it's going to be. I think it's going to be a tight race. If it is clear-cut, well then, but I don't think that way at all, judging from the various boards. We know that the islands will stick with the islands candidate that is given, but... You know, Barbados is not going to support, from what I've gathered, Barbados is not going to support Dr. Shallow. So his support has to come from down in Trinidad.
Mm. What about Guyana? Hello? What are you hearing?
Well, I think Ghana is also a major player.
Mm.
I think Ghana is a major player in relation to
do you think Ghana will support, the presidency. Do you think Ghana will support Haven or Shallow?
I can't speak for the Guyanese and who they support.
Mm.
But I know they've been given a lot of cricket. CPL is in their backyard for another couple of years.
Right.
So there's certain things that have been happening, Andrew. And we got to look at a lot. See, I don't really want to get myself into trouble because you say things and then people, try to twist it wrong and stuff like that.
Right.
But when you look at some of the appointments, Andrew, some of the appointments are pointing clearly in certain directions.
Mm.
You know, and we need to be very careful as in this cricket because we continue to give people slaps on their backs and we're not getting anything in return. Well, I agree with Mr. Marshall. You know, I would like to see a president who has nothing to do with cricket, who just comes to be strictly with business,
right?
And let the cricket affairs be run by the people who have that know-how to deal with cricket. Right. Because when you have the president interfere with certain things that come with cricket,
right,
there's always problems. There's always great problems. And I would like to see when we come to a day where we come to West Indies cricket, we have a president who knows nothing about cricket. He just comes to deal strictly with business,
right,
and carry on the business of West Indies cricket.
Mm. Philo, we got just another, 2 minutes left in the show. Tony, this is Tony Marshall. Do you think the race is going to be tight?
I don't know if the word is tight, it's because there are 12 votes.
Yes.
Kishore has 4.
Yes.
Billy Haven has 2, and he has Guyana as his seconder.
Right.
That's 4.
Right.
So now the BP is coming from Trinidad.
Yes.
So if the BP is going to work with the president, it would seem to me that the Guyana vote is going to go with Billy Haven. Ooh. Because it's him.
Mm. What about Barbados? Clearly Haven?
Well, no. From all I've heard, and from listening to you gentlemen tonight,
yes,
it's Barbados has made its mind up that they are not supporting
Shallow. Yeah.
I don't understand it, but that's what it seems like.
Mm, interesting. All right. Very interesting. Tony Gray, can you do anything in 30 seconds?
I can talk about the cricket. I'm going to stay far from real politics.
Well, we got 30 seconds left on the show. Your expectations for tomorrow's play. South Africa will resume at 314 for 8. What are your expectations? 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think that it all boils down to momentum. If you can get those 2 wickets in the first half an hour of play tomorrow, we will have momentum going into bat.
Mm.
If South Africa can hold on for an hour and a half, they're going to seize the momentum. And we're going to have it really difficult with those 3 fast bowlers coming at us. So we have to. It's imperative that we get those 2 wickets in the first 20 minutes, half an hour.
Interesting. Interesting. Always. It's heading to 8 o'clock. Thank you, Dr. Andrew Ford. Thank you, Philo Wallace. Thank you, Tony Marshall. It's good to see you. We're going to arrange that special program with Brass Sacks. And we'll be speaking to our very, very good friend in the studio. He will certainly arrange it. And, of course, Tony Gray will be your technical operator when that happens. I'm Andrew Mason. It's open for a bride tomorrow. It's good night.
Oh, dear.